was the definite article.
Oh, definite. Yeah, yeah, you remember it. Okay, good.
I got it.
That's good. That's good. So we'll have with this follow up. It's been 2 weeks ago. So with this follow up, we'll be able to solidify some of this thing and apply it right to the verses that we're talking about. Okay, this is Gospel Tuesday, August 28th, 2012, week 38 of the Gospels, and we're on the Sermon on the Mount, continuing that. We're taking a closer look at Matthew 6, 22, and 23. Now, the reading in the New King James goes like this: "The lamp of the body is the eye. If, therefore, your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If, therefore, the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" And that's not a question, how great is that darkness? It's an exclamation point after that. It's like, how great that darkness is. Okay, so now you notice here on our sheet we've got I've got the Greek for you anyway, so we can refer to it.
What does that BNT mean, Jeff?
Bible Works New Testament. It's probably a way they get around not having to copyright something, or pay copyright, I'm not sure exactly how they do that, but that's the legitimate text, okay. Greek text. And it says, ha luknos tu somatos estin ha ophthalmos. Now, ophthalmos should be familiar. Ophthalmos. Ophthalmos. It's where we get the word ophthalmology.
Tell your story
but
now.
It's
when
ophthalmology.
Reading off of.
Yeah, not good. But so that means the eye. All right. So now luknos, we might be able to think of that as where we get lumens. Light,
luminous,
lumens, the measure of light intensity, luminate, illuminate. And somatic, is body. So we have the light of the body is, estin, is the eye. And that's exactly how it reads. I'll do it again. The light of the body is the eye.
It's an interesting statement.
Yeah, it is.
I kind of thought that myself sometimes.
Yeah?
Yeah, about other people.
Okay. When you look into their eye?
Yeah. I can kind of see into their soul.
Well, that's interesting.
Well, I'm sure they could do it with me, probably.
No, I mean, no, it's interesting that, here's one of the questions it raises. Which direction does this phenomena take place?
You mean they're equal?
No, the direction of the phenomena that we see, this rendering of the light of the...
The lamp of the body?
The lamp. Because the lamp is always for guidance. It lights, it makes things clear that would otherwise be stumbled over. You know, a lamp in Scripture is that which is used to chase away darkness so that you can see, you don't bang into things.
Well, I mean, when I think of it, as I kind of read these lines here, you know, I think it's something that you're projecting. You know, it's projecting light, so you're like giving it off. So when we start looking down there later where it's darkness, it's like you're projecting that darkness.
Okay, you know? so the direction is from inside out?
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. I think so.
And the perception is from the outside looking
in.
Yes. What about the idea of it being the other way?
Yeah.
The condition of the eye determines what we perceive.
Right.
Or maybe it's both ways.
Well, based on what you were saying in the first part, you know, how it's illuminated so we can see it. Or
and as we are talking about it, I'm thinking of without being born again and without the Holy Spirit, that illumination within you, you are walking in darkness.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so.
But I can tell when I'm around people in the park, and then I meet just other people on the street, you can tell how much darkness they're in because they have very little light or very little knowledge of Scripture. Just a religious knowledge, and they really are in darkness.
That's something that they live such terrible lives.
Yeah.
Well, but that's you're looking into them, what they see.
Yeah, there's not that much.
So you're saying that this perhaps has to do with how much they are able to perceive as they look through their eyes, or use their eye as an instrument.
Yeah, I'm confused.
And then you're thinking in terms of looking into somebody's eye and being able to read inside of them.
I think so. Sometimes.
Well, that's okay. No. I'm not trying to. What I'm trying to do here is find out what our first impact, our impression of this verse is.
It's interesting to learn about it.
Yeah.
You know more
because
about it,
because by looking at that, then we can see, we can understand if we're getting it right, and hopefully we will get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, I am not absolutely sure I know which the right direction is, whether it's not both directions. You know what I mean by direction now.
Yes.
Looking in,
yeah.
Perceiving into the eye, or as we perceive out from our own eye.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's continue then. But the way it's worded, now the ESV here that I have, so you'll see me quoting that from time to time, says... there's a comparison verse in Luke 11:34. So we've got something else to refer to that says a similar thing, worded a little bit differently, but not significantly different. And it says, "Your eye is the lamp of your body." Your eye is the lamp of your body. Okay, so... now, if you look at the Greek for 11:34, you will see underneath the English, you'll see the Greek. If you can't compare it to the Greek... As you see the characters, I don't expect you to be able to read it, but just
well,
compare
the
characters.
The same.
Okay, the first line is exactly the same,
exactly.
Is it not?
Mm-hmm.
Except for this "su" at the end, before the period in Luke 11:34.
Su.
We're mid-page, exactly mid-page. What number one?
11:34.
Luke 11:34.
I was a little ahead.
Okay. And you'll see it says that the words match up except for the "su." Now, that "su" means of you. And we typically translate it as the possessive "your." I usually prefer, until I just have come to a more definitive translation of a verse, I prefer to leave it in that original structure of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until I understand what's going on, and then I'll sometimes make it your, but not always. However, here's what we've got then. You'll notice that the ESV version, English Standard Version says, your eye is the lamp of your body. Do you see the pronoun occurring twice?
Yes.
Your eye, instead of the eye,
uh-huh.
which it says the eye,
uh-huh.
is the lamp of your body. Technically it says, the lamp of the body is the eye of you, or your eye. And yet the ESV translates it, your eye is the lamp of your body. Now, for one thing, the ESV has it different than other translations, as we will see later. But in the meantime, let's talk about the first things first, and that is this. The first thing to notice is the first proposition. Now, proposition is not the same as preposition. Proposition is a statement, an assertion, where some subject, something is said about a subject, or the action of a subject upon something else. An assertion is made that involves a subject and a verb, and some kind of predicate. Subject and predicate, let's say. Because it could be a subject and a verb, could be a subject, verb, and some direct object, indirect object, whatever. Okay, so here's what we've got. Your eye is the lamp of your body. That's what it says in ESV. Comparing Matthew with Luke, Luke makes the idea personal with the addition of the possessive pronoun your. Now the proposition we're talking about consists of two nouns connected by a to-be verb, is. And the two nouns or substantives that we're concerned with is, first, the light, and then
the lamp.
The lamp and the eye. Now, should we render the lamp how would we render the lamp is? I got that sentence all wrong there. You notice that? I put the lamp, the body is the eye of you. let's try this again. The lamp is the lamp of the body is the eye. Let's just let it go at that. Okay? Now if we make it personal like Luke did, we would say of you. The eye of you. Should we make it that the lamp, like the first set of circles to the left, the lamp of the body is the eye of you. Should we make it the eye of you is the lamp of the body, or should we make it the lamp of the body equals?
It should be equal because it's got the, I don't know how you say it, the awe thing in front of both the
Okay, good. You notice that. It is the definite article
definite
is
article.
In both, in front of both nouns. So both nouns have the definite article. That means it's a convertible statement and that it's an absolute identity.
Oh.
So what this is saying is, it's not qualifying the eye or the lamp of your body as as your eye, in part, it's saying that that's what it is. It's a form of identity. You can, so we could turn that either
like,
way.
That's what I think of. I think, okay, you just...
Right.
You know.
But we have to be sure that we're getting the entire terminology in here, because it does say the lamp of the body is the eye.
So it's not just the lamp.
Yes. Right. So that's not saying that every time we see the word lamp in Scripture that we can replace it with the body. I mean the eye, rather, the eye. So the lamp is qualified by being the lamp of the body. Now this brings in question this translation, your eye is the lamp of your body. Notice that the ESV turns it around backwards, the eye being first, properly translated, the eye is the lamp of your body. But it says your eye is the lamp of your body. When what it really says is the eye is the lamp of the eye, your eye is the lamp of the body. Well, maybe they thought that was too particularized.
Uh-huh.
And so they made it more generalized by saying your eye is the lamp of your body.
Uh-huh.
And somebody else's eye is the lamp of their body. Rather than having confusion with us thinking that the eye of someone could be the lamp of somebody else.
Uh-huh.
But it's not, it's to me, it's still not translated properly by the ESV, which I was counting on being a more literal translation as I understood it to be. So I'm kind of a little disappointed already at that point. Okay, so I'm not trying to make it confusing because of that disappointment, but maybe I'm putting too much baggage in this whole process, you know, trying to do too many things with this verse at once. But we can see that it is a convertible relationship. And if we're dealing with one person's eye, it's going to be their eye and their body. That's true. But for our thinking, we can either leave the your eye or your body out of there and just say the eye is the lamp of the body, and face that proposition square on without any encumbrance, just as it's presented to us in Matthew. Okay? So which one is it? We know that it's totally equal, so it's the one on the far right. The lamp of the body is the eye. Okay. Now, in page 2, you'll see these various translations of Matthew 6:22. The ESV, the eye is the lamp of the body. Okay, that's right on in that translation. King James Version 6:22, the light of the body is the eye.
Is it supposed to be light or lamp?
Well, that's the thing. It is lamp. But a lamp issues light.
Right, yeah. Okay. That's where I'm down with that. That's what I was saying before.
So, but it's still, it's...
off a little bit.
It's not the same thing.
Uh-huh. Because it's actually the thing that's coming out. It's not what's producing
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. You've got, that's a good perception. The lamp is the thing that produces the light. It's not the light itself.
That's what we see, you know.
See now,
they're producing a good
light.
You're
a critical reader. You are in this, and that's good. Okay, so let's go on it. And the NAS, New American Standard has it, the lamp of the body is the eye.
Uh-huh.
And Matthew 6:22 in the New King James is the lamp of the body is the eye. Same thing. So the ESV is actually taking the eye and putting it first,
uh-huh.
which is actually okay because it can go either
right.
way.
It can go either way, yeah.
But does it read any differently? The eye is the lamp of the body. The lamp of the body is the eye. Which way does it read easier? Or do you have
well,
any preference?
If we didn't go over what we did last time, I would say the, you know, the second one is helping to define the first one you read.
Yeah.
You know, like, if that makes any sense. It's so we have this, and then it's like saying it's kind of like this, the second thing, as opposed to. Seems like a, what is it, a simile? What's like or as?
Simile.
So it seems like the second part is like a simile for the first one, where it's just some sort of attribute or whatever. It's trying to describe it by. But when we went over, we said, no, they're exactly the same. So it's
I think we tend in our English thinking to put the accent on the emphasis on the first.
Yeah.
First. So if we say the eye is the lamp of the body, that gives us the preference to the eye, a focal point, no pun intended, of the eye. We see the eye, and then we think of it as being a lamp of the body. And this is where your interpretation comes directly into it. The eye, you look at the eye. The eye is the lamp. If it's his eye, it's going to be his lamp, the lamp of his body.
Well, this is the way I am.
Right. No, that's very interesting. That's what you chose, and that's probably the more clear way of expressing this and understanding it.
Yeah.
To say the light of the body almost creates a little dissonance there, a little like it's more of a riddle. What is the light of the body? The light of the body. I don't even understand. It is the eye is the answer. So you wait for the answer, and so the eye appearing at the back has an emphasis in the fact that it's withheld. So, you know, but the fact is it really doesn't matter which way we approach this. Okay, now if I haven't thoroughly confused you, notice what the NAS does with the text from Luke. The exact syntax of the read text is, the lamp of the body is the eye of you. That's how it reads. And they put it, the lamp of your body is your eye. Okay, so we talked about that. There's no sense to even deal with it anymore. And then the ESV takes it a step further. It says, your eye is the lamp of your body. Which reads okay.
Uh-huh.
It reads well. So nothing to worry about. Now the comments that I want to make are don't appear on this sheet. I'm going to go over here and ask this. Let's see. Do we have, are we given a hint as to the direction in which the eye is to be examined when estimating its health? Because here, the rest of the verse is, if your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, so we have a good-bad idea, right? Your whole body will be full of darkness.
And then you have a little, when you contrast the idea with the Luke, you have from the ESV, it says, when, you know, when your eye is healthy.
Healthy.
I know that's a different verse, but that's...
No, but that's a good
healthy.
Question. That's a very good question. Now let's look at the Greek to see if they've translated it differently. And where it is when your eye is, who says, does the Greek say when your eye is good, or does it say when your eye is healthy? Good implying good health. Okay? And by looking at the Greek, we can see here that the word ophthalmos, let's see, before your eyes, healthy sound, okay, is hapless. Hapless. I mean, that's what hapless, that sounds funny. Hapless, but that's hopless. Hopless means sound, healthy, or generous. When your eye is healthy. So it's not a contrast between raw,
how you say
good and bad. It's healthy.
So how do you pronounce the alpha?
Hop-loose. Hop-loose.
Hi.
P sound. L Lamp sound. Oos. The O-U is oo. Sigma S.
So what's the definition of that? That's a real word? Hop-loose?
Yeah. Hop-loose. Sound, healthy, generous. Now, it's an adjective, so we would translate that when your eye is a sound one, healthy one, or generous one. Okay? Yeah. Generous would be in some uses. Otherwise, we'd have sound or healthy. Okay, so to answer the issue, are we talking about the difference between good and bad, evil and goodness? And the answer is no. We're talking about healthiness, when the eye is healthy.
I guess I was looking at it wrong.
Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily.
That's just what I thought.
But if we look at the negative end of it, when the eye is bad, okay, we see the word paneros, which is definitely a word for evil. So, paneros, if you look on the top of page 3, sheet 3, the word is paneros, and it means active, particular evil as opposed to general, unspecific evil, bad, wicked, sinful, guilty, unsound, but it can mean unsound, so it can mean unhealthy as well. Bad, worthless, fruitless, malignant, painful. It can also mean envy or jealous. The jealous eye. What would a jealous eye look like? Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, you're very perceptive. You look at the eyes and it tells you something.
It does, actually.
Okay.
But I hope I'm not too judgmental.
I understand. No, but you read what you can. This is good. This is interesting. Now, the possibilities, that if you just go off of the top of your head and start thinking the possibility of the paneros ophthalmos, the evil, the bad eye or the evil eye, there is a term evil eye, and I think it's...
What are some other ones, like what is it, shooting daggers with your eyes?
Yeah, exactly. Because you're wishing someone to, so you're projecting this hatred to them. Well, daggers, I mean, you want them to die. See, the eye of the envious is to kill and take what they have.
Well, the cool thing is, like James is saying, I mean, the eyes are so, when you're looking at mugshots, you know, what do you look at? You see some guy's eyes, you say, that's him, you know? You know what I'm saying? Even
yeah,
in a movie.
The look he projects.
You know, it's like the eyes are the most expressive thing you can tell about somebody.
Okay.
You know, even if their face is covered, you could be like, all
right.
Have
you ever looked at anybody that really scared you? They give you a look, you
know? That's what I mean, yeah. Unsettling. It's like, whoa.
Like, what? Yikes.
You get a glimpse of what they're thinking, or maybe, and it's...
And then there's others that will give you. There's others who refuse to give you eye contact,
right,
as though they have something to
hide.
And they don't want you looking into their.
And people like that.
So that's right. So you don't trust somebody who's not gonna.
Exactly.
If they're looking around, you know, they're not gonna.
They don't look trustworthy. They're not up front. Look me, and how many times? Look me in the eye and tell me that.
Right. Exactly.
So there's a lot going on
here.
All right. So the possibilities: evil eye, one full of jealousy or envy, in anticipation of issuing a curse upon someone. That's the eye that we see. You know. Now there are others that are darkened by the lids being half opened. When we're really upset with someone, we purse our lips tight lip, pull them together, and we pull our eyes together. Now if you think about that, what's that in preparation for, body language speaking? It's, we're preparing for a defensive strike from someone. Because if you purse your lips, you're hardening your jaw so that if it gets hit, it's not going to go flying around and get broken.
Oh.
You're not going to bite your tongue.
So what would be the
half-closed
eye? Like you're just focusing
squinting
on...
to focus.
Like you're not, I don't care about that or this, I care about
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Squinting with a resolve that points right at that person. I can see you, I can see into you right there, and all the other doesn't matter. In fact, I am totally unaware of that.
Right.
All I see is you. You're my objective.
That
and if I get hit, my eyes already have closed, and then I'm not going to get hit in the eye.
Sure.
So you stiffen yourself up for that. And we can tell a lot about body language in that, just by using common sense, I think. Now, what about the unhealthy as inflamed, the eyes? Bloodshot from lack of oxygen or nutrients, or as a result of having been preoccupied with worry about some all-absorbing problem. Our eyes can be, you know, can tell a story there.
Sure. If you're, worry, all-absorbing, if you're not sleeping, if, you know, you're right.
Right, your eyes are... And so the eyesight as a metaphor for God-determined spiritual blindness or clarity to see that which would remain hidden apart from God-given revelation. Now, if it's a metaphor in terms of spiritual blindness or spiritual clarity, then the eye would be healthy, able to see, not like you were saying, able to see and perceive. God gives that. So I believe
Jesus did do those miracles, but you think there's a significance with when he's healing the blind? I mean, it's not just, oh, gee, now you can see. I mean, is there this? Do we look into that? Like,
well,
or is it more
of a... it's metaphorical as well.
Okay. On top of that.
I once was blind, but now I see. Go give that testimony. Well, that's like saying, that's giving the gospel in essence. I once was unaware of my own sin. And becoming aware of it, I confessed it. He forgave me. He paid for my sins. I have a whole different outlook. Now I see. And then he's given me the ability to understand the truth. So there is the blind leading the blind. He refers to the spiritual leaders who were religious leaders who didn't know what was going on spiritually, leading others down the same path. And they will fall in a ditch. He will lead them into a ditch because they all fall in the ditch.
Well, that's kind of what we're getting at right here when we start saying, because if they think, you know, they have light, but it's actual darkness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they think it's light, you know, the right thing.
Right, right. You say you have, but you...
I'm thinking of one of the verses in one of the Gospels somewhere. You make him twice as bad as yourself, leading him into hell, darkness.
Right,
and
right
along with you.
Right.
I'm paraphrasing it, but basically it's saying you're leading right to hell with where you're going.
Right, and Jesus also said you are guilty not because you said you sin, but because you say you don't sin.
Because you don't
sin. In essence, that's what he said.
Yeah.
And because you don't, and it shows that you say that you are not blind is admitting that you are in the wrong with God.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anyhow, here are some quotes from the Old Testament. What I did here is I went into my database and just looked for the occurrences in English of the word I.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so what you see in the next long paragraph is a collection of those. So let's take a look at what is it. Now, most of these are from the Old Testament. And what we have to remember is who wrote this book that we're looking at right now.
Hmm. Is there a question?
Yeah.
Moses?
No, no. The verse that we're looking at. Who wrote that verse? I'm probably making it more complicated than it needs to be. In the verse, Matthew.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, in the book, in the text that we're looking at tonight, Matthew was a Jew. So we have to be open and ready to think of this in terms of his Jewish viewpoint on things. So if he uses this figure, even though he's maybe he's obviously quoting Jesus, he's still looking at it from a Jewish perspective, and he's understanding it from a Jewish perspective, right?
Yes.
And undoubtedly, Jesus was talking probably at that time, we can probably tell from this, that he may be talking to some Jews. More
that's what
Jews
he tended to do, I mean.
Than maybe Gentiles, but a mixed audience, and maybe it was understood in both Greek and Hebrew, but it definitely does have a Hebrew background, and so that's what we'll look at now. Your eye, you look grudgingly on your poor brother. Now, this is just to get the flavor of this. Your eye look grudgingly. Let's say it was, don't let your eye look grudgingly on your poor brother. So the eye then is a reflection of an attitude.
Dirty looks.
Yeah, dirty looks. Good. Or your eye pity him. A pitying eye could be maybe a moist eye too. You know, I mean a tearful eye. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was undimmed and his vigor unabated. So it's like he was pretty good shape.
Yeah.
Even when he died. We're right down here with Moses.
Page three.
Mm-hmm. 120 years old. Says, I undimmed and
his unabated. Vigor unabated.
Mm.
So I undimmed. Now, so that means that he was seeing with clarity.
Yeah.
It doesn't suggest that we're looking into his eye and there, like the eye doctor does, and sees. You know, actually, an eye doctor can tell a lot of our health. They know more of what's going on inside of
us. Blood vessels and all that stuff.
Than a lot of the doctors have to take tests and everything, but doctors never look into your eyes that same way.
No,
they cannot tell you some of the things that they see. We had an ophthalmologist tell us this. They see symptoms and all kinds of things. And they are not allowed, I understand that they are not allowed by law to practice on that. That is, they are not allowed to tell you. They may, from their own personal viewpoint, maybe if they know you as a friend or something, suggest you better get to a, doctor. Because, I'll just put it that way. Mm-hmm. And they won't, because they're not allowed to diagnose or
no,
do.
They're not.
But this is kind of like ironic, isn't it? That they have the ability to do this and they're not allowed to do it and doctors don't do it. What's up with that?
Yeah.
Doctors aren't trained to do that.
No.
They find the same information other ways. But what if a doctor was trained to look into the eye and the back of the eye and everything to see what was going on? It would be a window to our health that is like unexplored, practically. Well, that's just some thought. That's one of the many things that bother me. The journey on which you go is under the eye of the Lord. What would that mean? Under the eye of the Lord.
Watchful eye.
Yes. And what, when we're watching something, what is our response when we're watching something?
Your attention is focused
on
it.
Protection.
Right.
Yes.
Why would we look out our door across the horizon? And in the Jewish perception, the man sits, he's not just sitting on the porch, so to speak. He's looking out on the horizon.
Mm.
Because on the horizon, he can see from far off somebody coming.
Yeah.
And he is the protector. So he's not just sitting there watching ants on the ground build a nest or something. He's sitting there looking out. He's on watch. And that's sometimes what we forget. There's a difference between a person just sitting and staring off and a person sitting and on duty, on watch, and being vigilant. Okay, and there was a lot of that going on. Then in distress you will look with envious eyes on the prosperity that shall be bestowed on Israel. So, envious eyes. James gave us an example that was really good. Yeah, what an envious face looks like. Scare me, James. Okay. My friends scorn me. My eye pours out tears to God. So our response to having our friends scorn us is eye pouring out tears to God, turning to God and being affected by it. So that tells us something about the eye as an indicator of what's going on inside. My eye has grown dim from vexation. Okay, now, Moses' eye was undimmed, but he was certainly vexed in many ways. He was frustrated in many ways.
Well, yes.
And yet, his eye did not grow dim. However, what got him in trouble was because of vexation. And he stepped. Do you know what it was that caused God to deny Moses to go into the promised land?
Yeah, wasn't he wailing on the rock with his stick? Like he was.
Yeah, but what led up to that? What was his attitude when he was doing that?
I don't know.
That was a kind of a disbelief.
So you didn't trust God.
Yeah. He struck it twice.
Okay. So he said he was thinking in his mind when he did it, well, God, the last time you told me to strike, let's see, how was it? He struck it twice the first time. But the second time, I forget what the exact instruction was, not to strike it. Was it just to touch it, or what was it?
To speak to it.
Speak to it.
And not to hit.
Okay, thanks. I forgot. But I know that what he did was not what he was supposed to do.
It was an act of disobedience.
Okay. So, now, we have to think not only the act of disobedience, but the attitude in the act. And that attains to us as well, pertains to us. So it's not the fact, the stark fact that we are disobedient, it is our attitude in our disobedience. Because remember, there's an example. Which one is righteous? The one who said, no, I'm not going to do that, and he goes and does it. And he pleases his father. But the one who says, oh, yes, Father, I will do it.
And then don't do it.
You know, and doesn't even come close to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So attitude is important. As well as as being obedient. And obedience carries with it this idea. So here's what happened with Moses. Moses, before God gave him this instruction, was complaining to God, and maybe he was even complaining to himself to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, probably under his breath, must I do everything for this people?
They were very demanding on him, yes.
As if he was in control. And in that kind of a statement, the attitude that it reflected was that it was that he was in charge, not God. And he stepped over the line of authority.
Yes.
And God said, whoa, you're my man to do my job, but this is not your project.
No.
This is my project. And you've just disqualified yourself. Because we think of God as being so harsh and so cruel. So pitifully cruel to Moses for not letting him enter in.
And we don't want to mean to say this in a demeaning way, but it's kind of like gravity. Kind of like if you're going to walk off a building, I mean, gravity's going to pull you down. I mean, so kind of what you're saying with God. I mean, if you do that, He's
bound to respond in a predictable manner.
Yeah, with his justice. I mean, he's not going to be like, oh, well, this and that. I mean, he can do whatever he wants. He's sovereign. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, maybe it's a bad example.
No, I think it's a pretty good example.
Where it's just, like you said, it takes
it's very vivid.
The meanness like out of it. You don't get angry.
What do you expect?
You're right. Exactly. What do you think is
going to
happen?
What are your expectations?
He's still
giving the water, even though he disobeyed.
Right.
Right. Right.
Right. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Even gave the partridges or whatever they were flying over the.
Man of my night.
Quail, manna
in the morning and quail at night.
Well, yeah, but they demanded the quail, remember that? They demanded meat.
Yeah.
And God took all these birds off their course and dropped them on them.
They got
what they wanted, but they also got the consequence of their disobedience.
Yes, they did.
And God will do that sometimes. And we have to remember that.
I didn't say it before. Be careful what you ask for sometimes.
Because you might get it, and then you're going to... But you're not going to be... They wanted... Remember, Saul was the first king. They wanted a king... It wasn't the fact that they wanted a king so much as they wanted a king like the Gentiles had, like the heathen had.
Around them, yeah.
They wanted the same kind of situation. Mm-hmm. They weren't happy with what God had given them.
No.
Just as they weren't happy with the
men. They weren't happy with the judges, no.
Right. So they wanted a king just like the nations had. And they got it. And God... If you took a careful look at scriptures preceding the call of Saul, you will see God tells them exactly, you will take your daughters and bring them into the into the palace, and they will do this, and they will be, the bread you will bake will go to him, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it sounds like he's describing this despotic dictator. And he's describing their king that they're going to get. And if you follow along, that's exactly what happened. I mean, Saul was wonderful in so many ways. But he was also what God said that he would be, a king. And the ways of the king is, you know, the earthly king is a man king is not the best thing going.
He won them. It says, I'll grant you a king, but you would not like having a king.
Right. Right.
We wronged them.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, we don't need to revisit that, but you got the picture. Okay, so here's my eye wastes away because of grief. It grows weak because of my foes. Let's see.
All right, Jim. Well, I got to interrupt. So now, that makes me think, you know, with the Jewish law of an eye for an eye.
Yeah, I thought about that too,
so,
a little bit.
I mean, could that almost be, you know, you do something and it, you know, really like hurt me, you know, like, I don't know, like a deep level when we're talking about the, I don't really know where I'm going with that, but it's kind of like, you know, well, the retribution has to be equal to that same hurt.
So that you feel the same...
Right, the same pain and anguish.
The anguish that you caused. And it comes upon you.
Because when I first read that, how I was my whole life, I thought that was like such an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. I always thought that was so mean.
Right.
But it's,
and
you know,
so
but
physical,
it's limiting.
And just physical. Like you take away.
But it's limiting, you know, the punishment. You know, you poke out my eye, that means I can't go lop off your head.
Right.
You know,
and that's one aspect of it. But I think, I really think, because of the. Of the Jewish way of looking at the eye, apple of my eye, and things like that.
Right.
That's another thing, but there is something going on there with the idea of the eye reflecting what's going on inside.
So you think maybe there?
Yeah,
I
think I really think that you've got something when you say that it's the same kind of anguish. It's not just the eye, it's the same kind of anguish. It's so predictable, the anguish is so predictable with losing an eye that everybody feels the same about that. I mean, it's predictably, see, it's something you can talk about and everybody relates to it immediately.
Yeah.
Whereas if you say, a cart for a cart, well, hey, Jack, I've never had a cart. You know, like, what do I care? You know, go ahead, sue me. I don't have a cart. Things like that. And we all have an eye, and it's very valuable to us. We cherish. And if it's taken away, the anguish is great, and there is measurable anguish. And so that same by that same measure, there should be anguish put upon. And I would dare to say that it would not have to be a literal. I'm not saying that the scripture is not literal.
Right, right. No,
but
I understand.
But in that sense, it would not have to be a literal eye. It would have, it would offer the same anguish at the same level as was meted out. And that's something interesting to think about, too. Appreciate that. Okay, so...
Be gracious to me.
My eye grows dim with sorrow and by... Where is that? Be gracious to me, O Lord, for I am in distress. My eye is wasted from grief. Well, we see this eye wasting away. Now, how does an eye waste away in grief? Waste away in grief.
I mean, I can only think of, like, you know, physically, if you're crying, your eyes are bloodshot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Yeah, your view through a bloodshot eye is not the best view. You don't look at things when your eye is so and your eye is swollen.
Was another one where you look at somebody with a jaundiced eye or something? I think.
Yeah. Now there's an expression in there, jaundiced eye.
You know, there's just kind of like you're saying, there's something wrong with.
Right, you know, now, yeah.
Because there is jaundice.
And it colors,
yeah, it colors.
Colors your vision. And swollen from crying and rubbing from crying and tear-filled, blurry. Okay, well, eye grows dim with through sorrow, the eye that mocks, oh now here, the eye that mocks a father and scorns to obey a mother will be picked out by the ravens of the valley and eaten by the vultures. Oh, that's a pleasant thought.
Oh, boy.
But the eye that mocks a father, so that would be the idea of taking what is the father or mother is doing, viewing it through this...
Rolling your eye.
Rolling your eye, yeah, the perspective that you've got, and then mocking them over it. The eye is participating in this because the eye is perceiving, but it's perceiving inaccurately, right?
That's what I mean, because it doesn't have much to do. I sometimes watch those poker things on TV. And I don't think it's fair that some people, they wear their sunglasses. They shouldn't be able to do that.
No, I don't think.
Because if you're, the whole thing is, you're looking for tells and things,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's not right.
Right.
You might as well wear a mask or something.
I didn't know they did that.
Yeah,
that
the, like
seems,
these poker
tournaments. Totally
yes, and they wear glasses so you can't see.
No, that's illegitimate.
Okay. But it's the same kind of thing we're talking about.
Yeah.
You can't,
yeah.
You know.
Well, at eye contact when you're driving. You don't know what a person, you don't know whether they're looking at you, looking
yeah.
away from you. Your car is coming, they've got tinted glass. They're at an advantage. They can see you, you can't
yeah,
see them.
Exactly.
And so like, hello, are you in there? You don't know whether a baboon is driving that car or what. I mean, there are certain things that need to be communicated,
yeah.
and I can see why that should be illegal for tinted. I mean, I'm all in favor of that kind
right.
of a thing. Okay, so anyhow, here we go. Yeah.
It's just an interesting conversation.
Your right eye causes you to sin, throw it away. All right, the eye, now here is where we've got some information, new information. The eye is similar to the heart in Jewish literature.
Do you know how you have those, the early symbols?
Exactly.
Is there, what is the symbol for?
I looked that up. I went into that. And boy, I'm all over the place, aren't I? The word for eye in Hebrew is ayin.
Ayin?
Ayin.
What does that mean?
Ayin. So if you drop the N, or our equivalent to N, You have I.
I.
I am.
Oh.
Okay, so the I reveals the heart of the person.
But does it have like the primitive picture? You know how you had like the tent flap and
sure.
So what did it what did it look like?
Okay, this will be interesting.
I always like those when you do those.
I'm going to give you two of them. Okay.
Oh, that's right. What did that? I forgot what that thing meant on the sperm.
So you read from the right to the left. And so this is the picture of an eye. And the N is a seedling. A seed with a sprout.
Yeah.
And it denotes continuation.
Yeah,
seed continues.
Like I said, though, it's interesting how...
Like Ben so-and-so is
but
the house continues.
But your
house.
Line continues if that's like a sperm, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Like your
sure.
But
sure.
I'm just saying, I didn't know that then, but it's just kind of neat how it actually...
Yeah, it does have a correlation.
So,
where my bag is.
So seedling as in it's just... Okay, we'll keep talking about it.
Okay, well, so the eye reveals the heart of the person. And that's how it is understood in terms of now to give you a physical example in Hebrew, if we're talking about another similar word that's used in Hebrew is descriptive of a spring or well. You know, like the heart wells up,
right.
The so-and-so springs forward. Spring is not like, when they talked about spring in the Old Testament, they weren't talking about boing, boing.
But it's whether it's bitter water,
water
or sweet water,
forth,
you know, whether it's
springing
good or bad.
Forth and, you know, lurching from the ground and things like that, springing forth. Fountain.
So it's kind of, in a way, if you think about it, it's kind of like your ideas. You know, when you look at somebody, you can tell what they're thinking.
Okay, so here's what happens. The word for well or spring or fountain is seen as the eye of the ground. Does that make sense? The eye of the ground. Because it springs forth from the inner part of the earth, what is going on in
the
earth.
That's how it expresses the eye. That's cool. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So here's the symbol, the symbolic language, which translates to, I mean, to regular Hebrew.
What is it called? Just the study of like language and morphology? No. What's like the study of like language, like how it mutates into different languages?
Philology?
Linguistics?
Linguistics? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think
that's
it.
That
yeah.
Linguistics.
Well, two aspects of philology and linguistics.
Yeah.
I think linguistics is general, the idea of philology is how the languages fit together.
I picked a couple of different ones. I didn't know what they called that.
Okay, so in order to get the well, what the heck is that?
It's a car.
Is it our fan?
No.
Air conditioner.
Is your air conditioning off?
No.
Yeah. Oh, you know, it's not a fan. It's a car. It's like something.
Okay.
It feels cool enough in here to me. No more in a jack.
Then you put the wave symbol for water in front of the whole thing. It's the M sound. And so it would be Mayan. Whoa, Mayan, as in Mayan Indians? I don't know, but they were very water-centered, weren't they? Mayan.
Yes, they were.
Make sure, you know, that does make you wonder about the connection. Mayan. That's the word. The word is Mayan.
Right.
And they had underneath all of their temples, they had water sources. The eye of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Good grief. I don't know if we've discovered something or not here, but that scares me in a way. I don't want to make that connection or not. All right, so let's go on. So the eye is similar to the heart in Jewish literature. So not only does the heart reveal the inward thoughts, etc., etc., the eye reveals. The heart is the motivator for our actions. The eye then becomes the indicator of our inner attitude.
Well, that gives us so much more depth, you know, when we're talking about like the right eye and the left eye, when the right
doesn't
and
know
left.
What the left. Well, and the right hand, of course.
Well, we have about the hands, too, but isn't there some part where it talks about the
right eye? I don't know. I don't think we have scripture that says, don't let your right eye know what your left eye is doing. Because they actually overlap, you know, hopefully. I hope they know what...
Well, like the old expression, you know the one. The eyes are the windows to the soul, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I think in a way I do.
Uh-huh. No, I that's what the first thing you came up with. That's kind of like why I wanted to nail some of that stuff down. It's not to make you feel uneasy or anything. Like, well, am I right or not? I don't know. The idea is that that's the way you think, and if you have support to that, then that's all cool, and you'll remember this, and you'll have it'll be a reinforcement as well, and something practical.
Worked for me many times.
Yeah. Now here the expression is that the eye is a lamp. Now lamps reveal, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Lamp reveals that the quality of a person's inner life. So here's that the eye is a lamp that reveals the quality of a person's inner life. That's what we have in our verse then. So that a healthy eye, or, I misspelled it, clarity of vision. Now see, now here, there's two ways that this can go. And if we, as we looked at some of these examples in the Old Testament of the use of the word eye, we saw that some of it had to do with looking upon the eye of a person from the outside. Don't let your eye look grudgingly on your poor brother. You see, that's a view from the outside, right? Because the brother is going to be discouraged by such an attitude. So he will perceive that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not... It reveals from the outside, it takes a look at the inside. But there are other ways, other uses of this when our view from this, our side of the eye, is affected by what's going on inside of us. You see what I mean? So that it appears as though we can look at this example, the metaphor of the eye, from both directions. Not only is it, in other words, it tells someone else what's going on inside of us, from this side, it tells us what's going on inside of us. Just as we're the ones acting, but our actions, if we look at our actions, it indicates the condition of our heart. We may not be aware of it, but it's an indication. And then we look at that ourselves from our perspective of ourselves. and we think, oh my, why did I do that? I got to reflect and think about that.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way, when we look out through our eye, there are certain things that happen that affects our view of things.
And I think that's what it's kind of getting at, really, when it says, how great is that darkness if you don't, if you're not acknowledging it, you're teaching people incorrect things, or...
Right, and I think
this unbiblical, unscriptual, you know.
Yeah.
Just kind of like Ken is saying, you're reading.
I totally agree, and I think this is where Jesus was using these kinds of parables and language that would suggest that you call yourself, you say you can see, but you can't.
Right.
So
the neat thing is they all understood like the language, you know.
Yeah, they really did. Yeah.
You know, like you just have to say the I, you know. I'm sure, you know, they all knew all these different.
Yeah.
You know.
It's not that hard to
figure out. Not true, but usually we just kind of, you know, brush over it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just go by modern day English.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
So that a healthy eye, which is referring to, it's not a bad eye. It's an unhealthy eye. Well, it does say bad eye, doesn't it? It does say evil eye, but it also says a healthy eye.
Okay.
So let's do that. So that a healthy eye... or clarity of vision suggests loyal devotion to God, while a bad eye, impaired vision, so a bad eye would suggest impaired vision. And it also connotes moral corruption. So the connotation is
it's like an impaired lamp. It's not giving up, you know, you can't see really where you're going.
Yeah, right.
It's leading other people off the cliff.
So it will give us bad direction. But at the same time, it gives us an idea of what's going on inside of us. All right, so okay.
Oh yeah, if your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out, throw it away.
Page 4. We're just kind of looking.
On that last one, Jim?
Yeah.
See, that makes sense to me, because if your right eye causes you to sin, remember we were talking about that? Like, if you're doing the right thing, but it's still a problem, see, even that right thing, you got to get rid of it. You know, if you're doing something, and it's a good thing, but ultimately... You know what I'm saying? Like, just, I try to think of an example. Just say, I don't know, you're tithing or something like that. It's a good thing, but you should be using that money to help your destitute parents, or so I don't know, something like that. It's like you're doing something good, but he's just saying, even though that's the case, you're not really doing the best thing you could be doing, something like that. And I don't know.
Okay, well, let's see.
Do you think they really mean tear out your eyeball?
Well, it's an example of value. See, the idea, the eye, as we can see, is very valuable to us.
Yeah.
And so...
It's very painful to tear out your eyeball.
And everybody has an eye. Not everybody has a car. Not everybody has a house. Not everybody has a this or that, but they have an eye. And at least they did when they started, usually. And and everybody can relate to that, and everybody can relate to the value of having an eye.
Mm-hmm.
So even if something as valuable as our eye to us causes you to sin, is the reason for your sinning, as if it's automatic and you, the only way you can stop it is to get rid of the eye, do it. It's better to do that. But it's an example, right? It doesn't mean that we go around and tear our eyes out, because.
I sure hope not.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd be pulling out both of them.
It's an expression of value.
Yeah, I see.
It's better that you lose one of your members, and members it can mean more than just the eye, than your whole body be thrown into hell.
Yeah, I sure hope that never happens.
Paul, when he was on the ship, they threw all the gear. The gear was to help them sail.
Yeah.
But they didn't need it when they were in trouble. And it's better that they lighten the load with this heavy gear that they would normally be hold very safe, you know, very important to the sailing practicality. Get rid of it if it's going to save the ship, the whole ship and its contents, including every passenger there. And they did it without hesitation. Mm-hmm. Normally you wouldn't think you're sailing along and, hey, let's just throw out all our gear. Okay. Well, actually, that's about all I've got. Little sketchy there, I know, but I think we've got a pretty good idea.
Idea.
I knew that was coming. I just felt that one over here.
Oh, that's pretty good. I'm sorry I stepped out a couple.
That's
times.
Okay.
That's
you got the no. You got the gist of it. You weren't in the dark.
No, I don't think I was.
No.
Your picture was worth a thousand words. When described.
I wonder what my eyes look like. People tell me they look like bad.
Really?
Yeah.
Like evil? Like evil eyes?
No, just I don't know what they mean by it.
Well, you'll have to ask them.
Like unholy or something.
Mm. Oh, I don't know.
I believe very much in Jesus and God. And I could speak in a certain way, but I won't do it in here. I don't care what people think. Because I know where I've been and how it goes.
I hear you. That's important.
God thanks, man. You got it.
Right.
Well, I pray to him twice a day. Probably more than that.
Okay. What do you think? I'm just important, right?
That's what I'm worried about. I'm not worried about anything. What other people think of